by the way?
If you have a green card.
You were okay, you didn't have to. Okay.
So this is a work collaborated with Ricardo Rocazzi and his graduate student Alexandro Vicky. Okay. So the outline, as usual, I'll first try to give you a very brief overview of the strategy for experimental search of Higgs boson at the LHC. And then I would move into the theory part of my talk. I'll give you the motivation overview of this work. Then the idea is that we would rank out dimension 6 operators involving Higgs and the cinematic fields only. And then we would look at the theoretical trend on these dimension 6 operators. And there are two classes of operators I want to talk about. Of course, I will explain the notation later. So the first class of operator, which I call OH and OY, is a so-called tree-level induced operator. And so this is I will talk about constraint on these two tree-level induced operators. Then the second class of operator I will talk about is what I call OG and O gamma. These are basically loop-induced operators. And I would discuss what the constraint we can place on these four operators altogether. And you will see that in the end, we were able to derive pretty strong statements in terms of going from constraint on the operator to making some statements about the cross-section of the Higgs production and the LHC. Then, of course, one very important issue is how big are the size of effects that I'm talking about here. So I would make a discussion on that. And then if I have time, I would also mention one special case that is that involved the little Higgs theories. And usually I don't have much time talking about this, so maybe I'll just flash the conclusion, and then I'll end with a brief summary. Okay. So we all know that Higgs is the last particle in this cloud that hasn't been observed directly, and you know as of 2006 the electroweave working group put out their final result for the fit for standard model Higgs, and the minimum chi-square for Higgs mass is turned out to be 85 GeV with an uncertainty of plus 39 minus 28 GeV, and this is from the precision electroweave measurements. But of course, LEP also has a direct search time for the Higgs mass at 114.4 GeV. That's actually next slide. Okay. So what we know is that from precision electroweak Higgs is if it's standard model Higgs is probably light. But of course, if you go beyond the standard model, then there's really no reason why it should be light. And then the research file is 114.4 GeV. And now, since LEP did not see the Higgs, the focus now shifted to Teflon and LHC. And both machines are hadron collectors. So then we need to discuss how Higgs can be produced at hadron collectors. It turns out there are four main production mechanisms for the Higgs at hadron colliders. One is the associated production with W and Z, like this diagram. And then there is a vector boson fusion QQ going to QQ plus H. And there is a group move fusion production GG goes to Higgs. And there is associated production with heavy quarks. The top quark. So, and if you look at these four production channel, one thing that stands out is the gluon fusion production of the Higgs, because this is the only loop induced diagram among the four. Okay, so being the loop induced diagram, naively you would think this has the smallest cross section because it's loop induced. But it turns out that once you're taking into account the PDF. Then this is a plot of all the different production mechanisms at the Teflon. It turns out that gluon fusion production is the dominant production mechanism at the Teflon, and it's an order of magnitude larger than the next to leading order one, which is associated production with W and Z. So a large range of Higgs max. Okay, this is for the Teflon. And at the LHC, it turns out it's the same thing that the gluon fusion potential gives the dominant potential mechanism through a large Higgs mass range. And again, it's an order of magnitude larger than the next to leading order one, but in this case, it is the vector boson fusion production of the Higgs at the LHC.
So the bump is what it's a
touch
bar threshold.
Yeah, because in the standard model, this is mediated by the top. Okay. So, and so in addition to knowing how Higgs is produced, we have to know how Higgs decays as well, because you know, Higgs is an unstable particle, then we can only see the Higgs through the decay products of the Higgs. Okay, so this is a BZ plus, so let me just guide you through this part. So if you look at the solid red lines, these are Higgs going to two fermions. Okay, and then if you look at the dotted blue lines, these are Higgs going to two gauge bosons at the tree level. So this is Higgs going to WW, Higgs going to ZZ. And then there is a green dotted line, are Higgs going to two gauge bosons that are loop induced. So you have Higgs going to GG, Higgs going to gamma gamma, and Higgs going to Z gamma. Okay? So from this part, you see that now, if you focus on the region that Higgs mass is quote-unquote light, meaning that below 160 GeV or so, and so the dominant that came out for the Higgs is going to be D bar, and tau and GG, okay? But it turns out that in the hadron colliders, you know, there's a large background to these three modes because these are all, you know, short as QCD jet. So, you know, there is a large background for this, in fact, these four decay modes. So it's very hard to see these four decay modes at the hadron collider. So it turns out that for a light Higgs mass, that the so-called silver detection mode for Higgs is through Higgs going to two gamma, which is way down, like you see that three orders magnitude smaller than the Higgs going to be above. But you know, this is what we have to deal with. And in fact, you know, for the Higgs going to gamma gamma, there's a continuum background. So in fact, you can sort of see a small bump above the continuum background in the two gamma chain. Okay. So then you know you see that you know if Higgs for light Higgs below 160 GeV or so, Higgs is produced through the gluon fusion production, which is a loop induced process. And then the main detection mode is also Higgs going to 2 gamma, which is also a loop induced process. So both Higgs production and decay are going through the loop induced process. And to me, this is a very unique property or unique opportunity for us. Why is that? Because we can use the loop induced process to probe whatever new physics that is running in the loop. Okay? Yes?
What about WWZ? What happens?
So that's why I say, you know, if we are above 160 GeV, then you use WWZ.
But even below that,
But these are so called WW star and ZZ star. You can try to do it, but they're getting harder and harder.
It's also the background.
Well, it's yes, and because the rate becomes because it's smaller and smaller, so you know.
I mean, it's still compared to gamma.
But I'm saying that you know the branching ratio is still small compared. Here it's almost you know 80-90%. So the rate is small, but the background.
Yeah.
So, right. Okay.
But still, what Pianon is asking, like if you say 130 or 120, I mean, would it be better to look at the four leptons produced by ZZ?
Oh, but you have to remember, you pay a big price for branching ratio in 2-4 leptons. So you pay a big price already for the branching ratio. For ZZ.
Just because the Z decays
into mu mu and E, that's only like 1 or 2%. And you square that for the 2Z.
For mu, 1%?
Yeah, it's all the 3%. It's very small. Okay, so it's not an easy thing to do.
Okay.
the Tao Tao, I think, actually is, it's not as hopeless as you kind of imply, right? Because you can do the reconstruction if it has a high PT.
You can try, okay? You can try. But what I am emphasizing here is that, you know, I think most of the attention, at least in this mass range, is really in the gamma gap because it's considered, quote unquote, clean.
It's the cleanest.
Yeah.
The Tao Tao, I think there's more people are starting to get more hopeful about that, I think, experimentally. Just because there's the tagging jets of the kinematics of the scattering that
could
allow
be.
You to do
yeah.
good jet fields.
But yes, could be. So but my focus, as I said, at least here is really, you know, to use the fact that it's also a loop-induced process, therefore is sensitive to whatever new physics that is running. So we all know that very recently from lab announced the exclusion part of Cinemata Higgs in the mass range between 160 to 170 GeV. And then for Cinemata Higgs, the procedure that we at the 95% confidence level is that Higgs is below 180 GeV. So you can see for yourself that the window for Cinemata Higgs is really shrinking. Okay. So we'll see if Tetron can accumulate more data and then either see the Higgs or place even more stringent. And so these are just a summary of what I just said, that the low Higgs mass, then the Higgs mostly decay into these hadronic modes, and in hadron collider these are very difficult to extract because of large QC background. And the super detection mode is Higgs going to gamma-gamma, which is also a loop-induced process. And so, you know, once the Higgs is found, then of course, if we can, the first thing we want to do is to measure the Higgs mass. Okay? So it turns out that if you use a Higgs going to photon, the Higgs mass can be measured very precisely. And this is taken from CMS physics TDR, assuming 30 inverse pent of bond, 14 TeV. This is the vertical axis is percentage delta M Higgs over M Higgs. So the claim is that for Higgs going to gamma gamma, they can measure Higgs mass up to 0.1%. Okay, so you know, for 120 to GeV Higgs, they can measure the Higgs up to 100 MeV. Incredible. And for a higher Higgs mass range, they use a. Was it me or it was shaking?
Anyway, I think it was you.
Yeah. All right. So for a heavy Higgs mass, it goes to a ZZ, but like I said, this talk I will not focus on the ZZ chain. So this is Higgs mass. But of course, in addition to Higgs mass, we will measure as much about Higgs as possible. So people have studied how to extract a partial decay weight of the Higgs boson. And so this is a study by Peter Zippenfield and company back in 2002. And this is nowadays this is very optimistic. Let's see, a 200 inverse pent of bond. Okay. So first they say that if you are interested in the ratio of partial decay weight. So then, for example, if you're interested in the ratio of Higgs going to GG over Higgs going to WW, this ratio can be measured at roughly 20-30% accuracy. This is including both experimental and theoretical uncertainty. And for the Higgs going to gamma gamma over Higgs going to WW, this is slightly better, but still between 10-20% accuracy. And with some pretty generic assumptions, it's possible to extract the partial decay weight itself. And so again, for Higgs going to GG, the uncertainty is roughly between 20-30%. While for the gamma is between 10-20% uncertainty. Okay, so of course compared to the Higgs mass, the uncertainty here is much larger. But this is what people studied so far.
So would you say if you given electric precision and Tevatron light and you believe in the standard model,
right,
then it pretty much tells you it's a light thing?
Yes, that's right. So that was a very quick overview of the status of Higgs search in the Hadron Collider. So now let me move into the main part of the talk, that is, you know, So I'm going to be taking the assumption that we believe there is a Higgs boson. Okay.
Yes, a short question. So what is like the minimal set of observables when you really talk about having discovered the Higgs on the LHC? For example, you observe a gamma-gamma signal, assume, but
what else,
the partial...
Right. So the detailed study is assuming that, of course, you observe a lot of things. Like you can tell the gluon fusion production from the vector boson fusion process. Then you see both go to gamma gamma and go to WW as well. So
you just can't reconstruct the mass peak to WW.
It's not an easy task to do. But so you have to give and take, you know. You have to put in some quote unquote reasonable assumptions and all that. Okay. So I'm a theorist, right? So now I'm going to assume that, you know, there's a Higgs boson, and then as a theorist, of course, the question we want to answer is how do we study theoretical properties of the Higgs? Okay. And a useful tool is the effective Lagrangian approach. Especially when a new states are heavier than the Higgs mass, and then we can interpret out the new states, and then we write the effective Lagrangian as standard Lagrangian plus a set of a high dimension operator consisting of the standard model fields and the Higgs only. But even within this effective Lagrangian approach, there are two traditional way to apply the effective Lagrangian. The first approach to apply the effective Lagrangian to write down all possible operators in a large mass expansion without making any dynamical assumptions. So it's just do large mass expansion, and you don't care about what model it is, and you know, and all the high dimensional operators are suppressed by some mass scale, and that's it. And then the second approach is the opposite of this approach is to pick a specific model you like, compute the effective coefficients of these high dimensional operators within this model, and then scan through the allowed parameter space. So usually what you do is either you make no assumption about the model, or you pick a specific model you like, okay? But recently there's been a proposal that is sort of a compromise between these two approaches. That is, you know, you try to make some simple dynamical assumptions to encompass a large class of models. Okay, and one example of this approach is the so-called strongly interacting Lie Higgs Lagrangian. I will use the acronym SILCH, which assumes that Higgs is a Lie composite pseudo-number boson boson, and that's it. Okay. And this is a proposed by Judy Chen and company back in 2007. All right. And so among these three different approaches, you know, what approach to use depends on what kind of questions you want to ask. And in this talk, we are mainly interested in structural and global questions such as, is physics at the electric scale natural? Okay. Or is the Higgs boson fundamental or composite? And or questions like, you know, this is a modern version of who ordered that question, that is, if new particles are discovered, who ordered them? Because we often use naturalness to say that, oh, naturalness predicts new particles at TV scale. But then the question really, if we do observe new particles at TV scale, how do we know that naturalness ordered them? In other words, how do we know that any of these new particles participate in the cancellation of the Higgs quadratic divergence. Okay, so in this regard, neither of the first two approaches seem useful.
In terms of IR, though.
What?
In terms of IR.
So next time, that'll be the answer to this question. Next time, give this talk. I was like, clip order.
I let gods already know.
Yeah. So what? The approach we take in this talk is a top-down approach by studying possible constraints on coefficient of the Higgs effective coupling from a principle such as naturalness principle, global symmetry breaking pattern, and unitarity. Okay. So it turns out that our method is quite general and can apply to theories even without a even with a fundamental Higgs scalar such as supersymmetry. But however, it turns out that it's very useful to use composite Higgs as a benchmark scenario and the Sage Lagrangian as a reference frame when deriving the constraints. Okay, so I would just, because of this, I'll give you a very quick overview of the Sage approach. And it has only pretty much three assumptions in the Sage approach. The first assumption is that Higgs is composite particle arising from Newton dynamics, which is characterized by two parameters, G rho, which is a coupling strength among the composite space, and M rho, which is the mass of new composite space. And you can see that this is completely borrowed from a Lorentz QCD where you have the G rho and M rho, the vector Meson rho. Okay. And once you have the M rho and G rho, you can derive another scale that is the M rho over G rho equal to F, and this characterizes the non-minimalizable Higgs self-interactions. Okay? And again, in Lorentz QCD, F is nothing but the decay constant of pi on. In this case, it's the decay constant of the nonlinear sigma model when the Higgs is a pseudo-Nabu Boltzmann boson. That's the second assumption. And the third assumption is that the standard model gauge group is a weakly gauge subgroup of a larger global symmetry group called G, and this is the global symmetry group of the strong dynamics at the, some roughly highest scale around 10 TeV. Okay. So that's the assumptions of the search. So why do I want to use the search component? The advantage is mainly in the power counting. That is, if you use the Sage Lagrangian, that gives you a set of a power counting rule, and that allows us to understand which operators are genuinely sensitive to the underlying strong dynamics. These are the operators that are suppressed by scale F. Okay? And also, it allows us to disentangle the relative importance of different operators in when it comes to collider phenomenology. All right? So, in terms of a linear order, the Sage Lagrangian has 10 dimension 6 operators, and in this work we study 4 of these 10 operators that control the Higgs production and decay at the LHC. And the 4 operators are what we call the OH. It goes like d mu h dagger h, d mu h dagger h. And OY, which goes like h dagger h, f bar h f. F are the cinnamon fermions. And there is OG, which is h dagger h, g mu nu, and O gamma, which is h dagger h, B mean and B mean. Okay? So how do they show up at the collider experiments? For OH, you can see that once you put the Higgs into its play, this gives a new contribution to the Higgs kinetic term. And therefore, you need to go to a basis where the Higgs kinetic term is canonically normalized. You need to rescale the Higgs field by something that is related to the coefficient of OH. Okay, so this, therefore, whenever you have a Higgs external leg in your diagram, then OH will show up. And for OY, again, if you put Higgs into one of these vectors, you see that this gives you a new contribution, high order contribution to the ECOR coupling of the Higgs with the fermions. Okay, so this is how they show up. And for OG and O gamma, essentially, again, you put Higgs into the vector, this gives you HG minu, G minu. So this gives you a gluon fusion production of the Higgs, and this, on the other hand, gives you the Higgs decay to 2 gamma. So these 4 operators control, among other things, control the production and decay of the Higgs at the LHC.
Is there a reason why you're not putting W operators, HHWB or HHWW?
HHWW. Well, it's essentially, there's a small component that goes to a gamma gamma, that's it. But as far as GG goes to H goes to WW is concerned, no.
So the claim is that systematically small compared to BB?
No, I'm not saying, but this is just, right, this B mu B is just characterized, I mean, if you like, think of this as F mu.
But why isn't this, I mean, he's asking why isn't the W and Z the Yang mill, the SU2 Yang mills thing?
Isn't the W B one, isn't it custodial symmetry violating? It's like T parameter and it's going to be small.
Is
Those operators are there. So all I'm saying is that when you think of O gamma, you should think of this as a linear combination of the W3 and B mu such that this is actually the field strength for the phone number.
Well, I understand that. No. Why don't you have field strength for the W3?
You do. I'm not saying they are not there. I'm saying that, but they don't control. They don't control the Higgs decay due to gamma. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you just fix the operators.
All the things that you can
going to be the most relevant for the production and decay of a Leibniz case.
Okay.
Right. That's
so, like I say, you know, they are 10 operators. So they are there. So, but as far as the GG goes, H goes to four, to gamma is concerned, these are the four.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's a CS parameter, the WB ones.
No, to Cliff, he's going to talk about H dagger H W minus square.
Yeah,
that one, but also WB, there's here.
Oh, WB, that's S parameter.
That's
true. Yeah. That's a very heavy constraint.
Right. So you've taken whatever those things were, you went to the photon piece, and you picked up whatever the coefficient was, which will be some combination.
Right. But you're right. Essentially, we're assuming that the S is very heavy constraint, so those are W minion, that subdivision contribution. Okay, so within the CH power counting, the size of these four operators are, you know, the first two OH and OY, they are suppressed by one of F squared. And so therefore they are genuinely sensitive to the underlying strong dynamics at the 10 dB scale. And on the other hand, OG and O gamma, they are only loop-induced operator. And moreover, they are not just suppressed by F squared. They are actually suppressed by G rho times F, which is M rho squared. Okay? So these are sensitive to instead the mass scale instead of the underlying strong dynamics. Okay? And
so what are the rules for doing this? What kind of rules are giving that?
It's very simple, you know, just like doing the NDA for the Carolina 400. Whenever you have a Higgs, it's suppressed by F. Whenever you have a derivative, it's suppressed by 4 pi F.
And how about the first, like, YLs versus the...
Right, so then in this case, CH is just an order 1 coefficient, and CY is also order 1, and YF is really the tree-level in Kalkofen. And the reason we put in this one here is that this operator breaks the same shift symmetry that the tree level Yukawa coupling breaks. Therefore, you know, the YF has to be there in the first place in order for this to be present. That's why we stick in the YF field. And the coefficient is called C1. And again, it's a generic just order 1. And it's for the same reason that for the OG, we put in the YT here. It's again, because this breaks the same shift symmetry that the YT breaks.
So and you also probably choose CY real.
Yes, I'm choosing all of them. These I'm not assuming CP violation.
Oh, the rest is real by
right. CY can be complex in the sense that YF can be complex. Because it's the same.
What I'm trying to say that if I go to the basis where YF
is real,
then CY still can have a carry a phase.
No, because it's H dagger H times
I'm sure, yeah, it's the only operator that is not self-conjugate.
The rest
is self-conjugate,
okay,
so
right.
It's the only operator that in your scheme, unless you specify something else, it's two operators.
Yeah, I agree.
So just make sure I follow it. So the G rows are there. So it's, I'm supposed to count derivatives go with 4 pi f.
Yes.
And fields go with f. And so the 16 pi squares I could follow by following the derivatives. And G row is there because that really.
Well, yeah, it's a. Yeah, so this is a some coefficient of yt over a G row whole thing squared. And essentially, let me see. The easiest way to see this is Well, if you try to think, one easy way to say it, if you try to think of the Santa Maria contribution for this operator, the OG, in the Santa Maria, it's a tuple. So it has to be suppressed by a mask. Because support for them is suppressed by, let me try to give you a simpler explanation after. But for now, just trust me. There are other ways to see why this has to be suppressed by a mask, but that I can mention them along the way later. So these are the four operators, and as you mentioned, there's another operator, the HDH diagonal voltage square. This breaks a custodial symmetry, and is severely constrained by the row parameter. So again, in this talk, I would just ignore the effect of this operator. So that was a four operator. And now, what we really care is the physical amplitudes and the partial decay wind. So we can try to, once given a series like one, we try to express the partial decay wind in terms of the cinematic field, cinematic prediction, plus the effect of these high dimension operators. So let me define the conceived parameter as V squared over F squared. V is a variable of Higgs. So it turns out that, for Higgs going to two fermions, it can be expressed in terms of the cinematic expectation plus the effect of this particular combination operator, CH plus 2C1. Okay? As I explained, CH must appear because, whenever you have a Higgs, when you have a CH, you have to rescale your Higgs to go to a canonically normalized basis for the Higgs kinetic term. Therefore, CH must show up. And C1 is there because it's a V squared over F squared contribution to the modification to the Ekow coupling, Higgs coupling with the two fermions. So, but what's important is this particular linear combination, CH plus 2CY. It turns out this is always a linear combination that controls the Higgs coupling to two fermions. Okay? And then for H go to GG, it turns out that you can write it in terms of cinematic expectation times. Again, one linear combination CH plus 2CUI, and again, this is here because we know that in the standard model, there is a top loop. So there is a Higgs coupling to the top involved. And that has to be modified again by CH plus 2CUI. Okay? But then this is a modification in the standard model top loop. But of course, you can have a new state running the loop. Therefore, you could have a new contribution coming from a CG. Okay, IG is just some form factor, in the limit that the mass of the loop particle is large, you can just take it as a constant. Okay. And then there is an H going to gamma gamma. And then again, the same linear combination, because there is a top loop, the same linear combination that controls each top and two fermions. And again, when you have new particles, you can generate new contribution C gamma. And in this case, there's also a contribution coming from an operator called CW that I will now talk about in this study. Okay. So this is how these four operators relate to the physical amplitudes and partial decay wind. And I should mention that in addition, OH also contributes to the high-inch limit of the scattering amplitude for the longitudinal gauge boson, because the longitudinal component of the gauge boson are nothing but the Higgs boson. So let me make an important remark here. That is, when you do doing this kind of game, it's very important to remember the coefficients of these high dimensional operators. They are not physical unless you choose a specific operator basis. Okay. In other words, I can do a field redefinition h goes to h plus some arbitrary h dagger h times h over f squared. Okay, and then this is a simple field redefinition, and I know that the S matrix and M matrix remain the same. However, once you do the field redefinition, you can see easily that from the Higgs kinetic term dhdh, it will generate a contribution to the dimension 6 operator that looks like dh dagger h. This is what I call ch, And another operator called that looks at H dagger H D H dagger D H. Okay? And this is what I call the OR, and in the search my project I did not mention this operator. And the reason is because I'm choosing the operator basis in such a way that the coefficient of this operator OR is set to zero by doing this field recognition. Okay, so this is the operator basis that I choose. So once I fix this operator basis such a way that the coefficient of OR is zero, then the coefficient of the operator in this basis becomes physical. Okay? So this is very important to remember. And also, once you do the field definition, H goes to H plus, H dagger H over F squared, then you see that you also generate contribution to OY from the tree level you call copy, which is like this. Okay? So again, the emphasis here is that we would choose a particular A in such a way that the OR is zero in our basis. And another way to think about this is you can use the equation motion to rewrite all these different operators. And moreover, I can use this trick to move all new physics effects into so-called oblique operators. Okay.
So it's the physical mass of a particle then is that going to be affected by this? And how it's
no, because I was using
a 24 combination of the new physics effects and standard model.
Right. So once you do this field recognition, obviously you see that from Higgs potential, you also generate higher order than Gen 6 term and all that. So that's going to change. So the important thing is to understand what's your physical input. And what's your operator coefficient? So in the end, what you need to do is to rewrite your physical input in terms of some combination of these coefficients that are invariant under this field redefinition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the trick.
No, I understand that, but physically, the mass.
Physical is mass
from both things. Right?
Yeah, but the mass is what you measure.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So it's also important to emphasize that we are using the so-called the quote-unquote universal basis language, which choose to parameterize new physics in such a way that they only show up in the oblique operator. So now let me move into the constraints on OH and OY, because these are the two trilemma induced operators. And so here what we did is that we proved a quote-unquote positivity constraint on CH, and CH plus 2 CY, and recall that CH plus 2 CY is exactly the coefficient that controls the Higgs coupling to two fermions. Okay. So what we found, it turns out there are three possible sources for CH and CH plus 2 CY. Okay. The first source is that when you have a Higgs, a composite Higgs, and then you have a nonlinear sigma mod describing the Higgs, then coming from the nonlinearity in the Higgs kinetic term, they are dimension 6 operator contributing to CH and CH plus 2 CY. And we show that in this case, both CH and CH plus 2 CY are always positive within the nonlinear sigma mod. Okay. And then, in addition to nonlinear sigma model, when you have a new heavy space that couples to the Higgs, and then when you integrate this new heavy space, you could generate new dimension 6 operator for the Higgs alone. So that will give a new contribution to this dimension 6 operator. So we analyze that we can when you integrate a heavy scalar that couples to the Higgs directly, this happens when Higgs is either fundamental or composite, then we found that, first of all, Higgs CH is positive except when they are triplet scalars. And our understanding is that the reason that the CH can be negative is for the triplet scalars because there is a doubly charged scalars in this case.
So those are the, I just want to make sure I understand, those are the triplet scalars like the usual B field and little Higgs notation that appears in the nonlinear sigma model?
B field?
Okay, don't worry about the notation. But they're the usual triplet scalars that come with the Higgs as well, just in the
right
in the usual exponential.
Or just, you know,
for the general pi for, times the broken general.
If you like to think of Lvovich, yes, but in general, you could just have a triplet scale that couples to the Higgs that are not coming from nonlinear sigma model. Nothing forbids. It depends on your model. But yes, so the only thing we care is that these heavy scalars have some certain quantum numbers. I'll make more comments about this in the next two slides.
So the logic of the argument, though, is that it's not a constraint in the sense of the consistency. You're just saying you go through a lot of interesting models and it happens.
So what we're doing, what we did here is, here the principle we're only interested in integrating of the heavy fields at the tree level. So we are only interested in interactions with two Higgses and one heavy scale. Okay, so this is a qubit interaction. So from here, in fact, electron symmetry completely dictates the quantum number of this heavy scale. If you want to write down a consistent qubit interaction, that respect SU2 plus U1. So that determines the scalar can only have either electric SU2 singlet or a real triplet or a complex triplet. So the group theory fixes the quantum number of this heavy scalar. And once you know the quantum number, you can write down the qubit interaction. And you write down the most general qubit interaction, then you can integrate out this heavy scalar just explicitly by hand.
But can I interpret that as yes? Because the answer in the sense that you're looking at this class of models and you're saying in these models, this approximation?
No, I'm saying that we are not looking at, all we care about is that, as long as your model respects SU2 cross U1 symmetry.
So your claim would be that any model that respects SU2 cross U1 symmetry, I cannot find a model that will make these things negative?
Unless you have a triplet scale.
You think that's the only way?
That's the only way.
But the way I'm understanding you're presenting is that you're kind of doing it case by case.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not doing any. What I'm saying is that the logic is like this. First of all, I'm only interested in qubit interactions which contain two Higgses and one heavy scale.
But what I'm hearing you say is you're giving me a bunch of restrictions that are in a class of models that you're interested in. And in that class of models, you're saying you can show generally that it's positive. Is that right?
So far, I haven't referred to any class of
something. So the way you just said, the models with that trip neighbor effects that you can.
But no, that's only coming from the assumption that I won't integrate out heavy scalar at the tree level.
Okay, so.
Right. So what I'm saying that. So I'm interested in.
I think a model that doesn't do that, should it be positive?
If it doesn't do that, that means that you're not going to get a tree level effect coming from integrating out heavy scalar.
Okay,
if it's not tree level, then I don't care. It's small. Yes. Then we don't investigate what's the sign.
So you're not saying this thing can't be negative, you're just saying that in this class of model.
I'm saying that, yes, to the extent that there's a three-level effect from integrating out these heavy scalars.
Okay, so I'm hearing you say yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Alright.
So, okay. So this inequality is true when you choose the, you said small operator cases in your particular choice?
Yes. So everything, every sign here, In this operator basis that I chose.
Yeah, in general, this can be one if you do the phase shifting.
Well, in general, then if you're not in the, if you don't fix your basis, then like I said, the sign is not physical, then it doesn't make sense to talk about constraint about the sign.
Probably there is some kind of invariant combination.
Yes. So in any way, if you would like to go to the physical basis, then what we are saying is that whatever the invariant combination that controls the Higgs coupling to two fermion is positive. That's all I'm saying.
What would be unphysical about being negative?
I'm sorry?
What would happen
if I'm negative? Yeah, because I thought you said it was unphysical.
No, I'm saying that if you don't stay in a particular arbitrary basis, then the coefficient is arbitrary because you can do an arbitrary field redefinition to change your coefficient.
No, but
in
basis.
Therefore,
in basis.
In my basis, yes, then this sign is physical.
And so what would go wrong if it was negative?
We just cannot find any tree-level effect that would give you a negative coupling for the CH plus 2C.
But why can't I just tell it? I just want to write down the theory where it is negative.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. To the extent that you have only cubic coupling between one heavy scalar and two Higgs. You can't find such a theory.
Can't find any.
No, it's not just you. You just can't within Lagrangian approach. You can't run out Lagrangian which has cubic interaction between one heavy scalar and two Higgs. That will give you a negative CH plus two CO once you integrate on the heavy scale.
What about nonlinear sigma model?
And we prove that nonlinear sigma model that to the extent that the nonlinear sigma model is unitary, this sign is also always positive.
How about multiple scales?
Oh, then it's a different story because here I'm assuming there is only all the new states can be integrated out. So I'm writing out.
Oh, right. Sure. But suppose I make
no,
scales.
No, of course, then that's a different story. So I'm very clear here. I'm assuming one Higgs, and you can integrate the heavy space so that your effective Lagrangian dimension six operator is only Higgs plus then one Higgs plus then one of two.
You're saying something like the square of the negative number is possible.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's exactly what I mean.
Just when you said it's unphysical, that's a loaded word, right?
Well, it's unphysical in the sense that it's arbitrary.
Unphysical to me says that a theory which didn't do it doesn't make sense.
No, I'm saying that right. So, and then the third contribution that could give you CH and CH plus 2C, well, that is when you have a set of new heavy vectors, because no, the Higgs can couple to new heavy vectors. And then when you interpret the new heavy vectors, it can also get a contribution to CH and CH plus 2C1. Again, group theory tells you what these new heavy vectors can be in terms of their quantum numbers. And once you know their quantum numbers, you can write out the most general interaction. That, and then when you integrate them out, then you find that both CH and CH plus 2C1 are positive. Okay. And so I'm not going into the technical details. But just a few remarks. So that is that it's possible to derive a dispersion relation relating the coefficient CH with the cross section of the scattering for two same side boson boson and the cross this is plus minus this is plus plus and the cross section for the two opposite side boson boson. Okay, so you see that CH is related to the cross section of opposite side scattering cross section minus same side scattering cross section. So at first sight you see that there's a relative minus sign, so you would say that there cannot be any positivity constraint on CH because it's a relative difference of the two terms. But because the second term is the scattering cross section for the same side bosons, so at the tree level for this to happen. For these to be non-zero, you must have a doubly charged particle going between these two states. So this is where we infer that CH can be negative only when the second term is non-zero. But the second term is non-zero only when you have a doubly charged state. And this is indeed the case when you have triplet scalar. So this is not definitive proof, but this fits nicely with our explicit computation that we find that CH plus 2C, CH is negative only when you have a triplet scalar. Okay. However, in this case, that CH plus 2CY, that is the combination that controls the Higgs coupling to two fermions is still positive. And this is what I tried to say earlier, that using group theory, it's possible to show that the only scalar that have cubic interaction with the Higgs doublet are a singlet, a real triplet, and a complex triplet. Okay? So what these are the quantum numbers a singlet, a real triplet, and a complex doublet. And once you know the quantum number, you know how they couple to the Higgs. The singlet must couple to H dagger H. The real triplet must couple to H dagger sigma A H. And the complex triplet must couple to H transpose epsilon sigma A. Okay? Once you know how they couple, then this is the interaction you write down with some arbitrary coefficient, then you can proceed to integrate out this heavy particle, assuming that it has heavy mass. Then in the end, you find that, like I say, CH is positive except when you have a triplet scalar, and CH plus 2CY is always positive.
So I just don't understand exactly
the when there's a triplet scalar involved, it's not always negative, right? It just can be negative.
Well, in fact, it's always negative.
So it's always
negative. Yeah, it's always. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think my memory is always negative.
That's great. Because Higgs expound state needs negative as well.
So what I'm saying that if you see a negative CH, then you know make a triplet scale.
Because generically in the little Higgs models, which
little Higgs is a special class of theories that
there's generically a triplet scalar in there.
Yes, but this is what I'm going to show that we can show that within the little Higgs theories, that is, if you implement the collective breaking mechanism,
yeah,
then despite the negative contribution from triplet, the overall CH is still positive. So like I said, this is one example of a compact triplet scalar is HU5-HO5. Little is Higgs model. So this model has a collective breaking mechanism. The potential looks like one term that goes like plus, the other term goes like minus. Okay. So when you integrate out this triplet scalar, you find that CH goes like G left square minus G right square whole thing square over G right square plus G left square whole thing square with an overall minus sign. So this is always negative. Okay. And the important observation here is that, you know, because of this collective breaking structure, you see that CH is maximally is most negative when one coupling strength is much larger than the other. That is, CH is most negative, it goes to minus one when G right is much larger than G left.
So your G left and G right here, do those correspond to the usual G and G prime and the little Higgs with the collective breaking?
Yes, two different, that's right.
Okay, so those correspond to the two different.
Yes.
SEU question.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So yeah, and when G left equals G right, CH vanishes. And we know that's why, because this is the T pair of the limit and there's no tree level. Okay, but the important thing is CH goes to minus one, which is most negative when G right is much larger than G left.
So that also corresponds to the region of parameter space, which it's yeah, so it's going to like the T parity limit. So it's the region parameter space which is most compatible with electric precision data, correct?
For G right equals G left. That's the T parity limit.
All right. But there's another limit in these models where when you have a hierarchy of these couplings.
Yes, so in that case, you can take G right much stronger than G left, but in that case, you have to gauge only like one U1, but not both U1s and all that. So there are ways to evade the precision and
right, okay, yeah, I know. Okay, good.
So I mentioned it because this is one of the ingredients we use to prove that CH in no little Higgs model is still positive despite the negative contribution from the tree. And then the same thing for the vector that we know. The Higgs couples to vector only through the current, and the current, the quantum number of this current is again completely specified by group theory. So there could be this is in terms of the custodial SU2 notation, that is SU2 plus SU2 right. So you could have a triplet left-handed current, and then you have two kind of right-handed current that belongs to, you know, the triplet SU2 right. And so these are the possible current that can couple to the Higgs, and so this tells you that this current couples to this linear combination of the Higgs, this current couples to this linear combination of Higgs, and this current couples to this linear combination of Higgs. And once you know the quantum number of this current, then again you can write down their interactions, and that allows you to integrate out this current directly. But there is a subtlety here, is because we can also build vector currents out of just the purely cinematic gauge fields and fermions. For example, you know, for cinematic fermions, you can build a left-handed current that is psi bar down mu sigma a psi. You can build a right-handed current that is the singlet is psi bar down mu the hypercharge psi.
Question, excuse me, how do you gauge the Gromov in your case, your SU5?
No, this has nothing to do with how you gauge your symmetry. This just tells you that as long as the launch symmetry is issued across U1, okay, that completely dictates how your Higgs can couple to a better current.
So what is the equivalent of S2R? S2R is gauge symmetry.
So this is saying that if you have a triplet of H2R, then they can couple to the Higgs this way. The current can couple to the Higgs this way.
But now then you are extending the threat of gauge symmetry.
Yes, so of course. So because we are talking about integrating now new heavy vectors. So that's by assumption we are extending it. Otherwise there is no new heavy vectors.
So this question is not related to previous little Higgs.
No, this is not. Okay? So if you can build vector currents coupled to like these fermions coupled to this new current, then when you integrate the new vectors, you see that you can generate four fermion operators. Because these are new fermions. Okay? And clearly, this four fermion operator is not oblique. So that would take us outside of this quote unquote oblique basis that I say that we are assuming that is we want to move all the new physical effect into the oblique operators. So there are a couple of ways to deal with this. One way is to do a filter recognition to bring us back to the oblique basis, that is to eliminate the four fermion operator in favor of other oblique operators. That's one way to do it. The other way is to choose a specific combination of low energy interpolating field or use the leading order equation of motion to turn these four fermion operators into, like I said, oblique operators.
Both procedures give you the same.
Of course. Okay, so once you know these tricks, then you can just integrate out these heavy space vectors explicitly, then by now there's no surprise that we find both CH and CH plus 2 CY plus. Okay. So, you know, again, this is something for this statement is something that related to the little Higgs, but the statement itself is general. That is, when you integrate out heavy vectors within non-sigma model, that is, you know, when you have non-sigma model engaged more than one copy of SU2, then you will have new engaged photons within the sigma model. So then this is something that can be computed explicitly within the non-sigma model. And what we find is that in this case, the CH is not only positive, but it's also independent of gauge couplings. And it's just a bunch of group theoretic factors. And this statement is used again in proving that CH is positive in all the Higgs theories despite negative contribution from triplet scale. So for all these positivity constraints, our convention is such that the positivity constraint implies that the unshared Higgs coupling is reduced from the standard expectation if no other operators contribute. Because we recall that in the previous slide, what I write the partial width in Higgs going to 2 fermion as the leading order minus CH plus 2 CY. Therefore, if CH plus 2 CY is positive, then that coupling gets reduced with respect to the standard expectation.
So this is depressing news for me. But so CH is always greater than 0. See, so you don't have any of the gauge couplings. So you just have group theoretic factors, but you know, there's a lot of different ways you can have a little Higgs model of different groups and breaking, so you get different groups theoretical factors, but it's still always.
Yeah.
So because why is that? Is it easy to understand as to why it always overwhelms the negative contribution?
There are actually three things that we have to use to prove that CH is positive in little Higgs. I'll come to that. Okay. But again, I admit that all we have is a technical understanding. And it just comes down this way. So let me quickly go through the constraint for OG and OY. So what we're trying to do is here for OG and OY, we're trying to establish a correlation between the cancellation of the Higgs quadratic divergence in the top sector and the size of OG that are induced by the new fermionic top partner that are colored.
So the conclusion we're trying to draw is that if the top control junctions is cancelled by this new top partner, then the interference effect between these two fermions is destructive, and whereas if the quadratic divergence is enhanced, then interference is constructive. Okay. So I'm not going through the formal arguments, but just give you a diagrammatic argument. That is, first, you know, this is the famous top contribution to the Higgs quadratic divergence in the standard model. And this has an overall minus sign times the absolute value of the top coupling square times lambda square, that is the color of square. And this minus sign comes about because it's a fermion loop, and therefore there's an overall minus sign in the amplitude. Okay, so let me try to ask a naive question here. That is, how do we use another fermion to cancel this top quadratic divergence? Okay, let me first give you a naive answer, but nonetheless, the wrong answer. That is, let me try to use another fermion that has only the Yukawa coupling, and it turns out this is not going to work because you have another fermion, heavy fermion that has only Yukawa coupling. Then what you have is again exactly the same diagram as the above, that is proportional to the absolute value of the Yukawa coupling square, with again the minus sign coming from the fermion loop. Okay. Another way to say these are exactly the same diagram, therefore they should have the same sign. And in this case, the top quadratic divergence always add up. Okay. So the way you can cancel this top quadratic divergence is to borrow the lesson from supersymmetry. That is, you have to use the four-point coupling between the Higgs and the fermions. And because now this case is the fermion loop for and then the four-point coupling, therefore its division for coupling goes by 1 over f, and therefore you need a mass insertion somewhere to cancel the dimension here. So it turns out that, of course, then once you compute this diagram, the quadratic divergence is proportional, it's related to the overall sign of this coupling. Therefore, if there's a reason that this sign is negative, then you can cancel the quadratic divergence coming from the top. Okay? So what I'm saying is that, you know, if these two diagrams have a relative minus sign, then the Higgs quadratic divergence is cancelled. Well, if these two diagrams have the relative plus sign, then the divergence is added. So now let me massage these two diagrams a little bit. So what I'm going to do is first put one of the Higgs into its bed, like this. Then let me insert two gluons into the fermion line. Then what you see is now I have, these are exactly the two diagrams that contribute to the gluon fusion of the Higgs production, GG goes to H. Moreover, I have the same insertion of gluons on the fermion lines, therefore the relative sign between these two diagrams should be preserved. Okay, in other words, if there's a relative minus sign when the Higgs quadratic divergence is cancelled, then these two diagrams would have a destructive interference in the gluon fusion production of the Higgs. While if the divergence add up, then you have a constructive interference in the gluon fusion production of the Higgs. Okay? So that's a very simple diagrammatic argument to see why there could be a specific constraint on the sign of OG with whether the quadratic divergence in the top sector is cancelled or not.
It could be a very small effect if capital T is large.
Well, I would say whether the effect is large or small really depends on what's the mass remaining.
Of course.
So. But nevertheless, what I'm trying to say is that a lot of theories trying to address the hierarchy problem, especially in the top sector, would argue that, you know, top quark give you the largest quadratic divergence to the Higgs mass in the standard model. Therefore, you know, you really would like the top partner to be below 1 TeV in order for the theory to be natural. But whether you believe it or not, it's up to you. But I'm just saying that's often one of the reasons involved for having the top partner that is below 1 TeV. But it doesn't have to be that way, right?
Okay. This argument, if I had been dimensionally regularizing, would this be an analog of this argument?
I'm sorry?
So you're following quadratic divergences in a way that makes me uncomfortable. If I had done this in dimensional regularization, could I have seen the same argument?
The same argument, not what?
Well, you're making an argument that if I do something, then I get a cancellation here. and that your something looked like it was cancellation of quadratic divergences, which sounds like it's regularization dependent.
Isn't this the usual argument about, you know, is there a hierarchy problem when you do that dim reg?
I would say yes, but I wouldn't see it through that. I would see it through matching across thresholds. So I guess that's
yes. So that's why I emphasize this is that diagonal argument. So in fact, we have a more formal argument to see this correlation in the sign.
But if I were to do the matching across threshold argument in dimension organization, would I see the same conclusion?
I have not thought about that specifically, but let me give you a different argument that did not use the diagonal, but instead use the Coleman Weber potential. Okay? So the formal arguments here use the so-called Lorentz-Higgs theorem. So in Lorentz-Higgs theorem, what we know is that the coefficient of these dimension 5 or dimension 6 of H dagger H G minion G minion is actually related to the one loop QCD beta function from the Lorentz-Higgs theorem, because you know all you have to do is compute turn on the Higgs as a background field. Okay, then you compute the contribution of the top product to the QCD two-point function. And you expand up to first and second order in the Higgs. That gives you a H G mu G mu operator. Okay, so this is the usual. This is the standard way to compute the coefficient of H G G operator using the two-point function of the G mu G mu. So what happens is that now. When you compute the one loop QCD beta function, you get a log divergence that goes a log of n squared over mu squared. And now the n here actually depends on the Higgs because you turn on the Higgs at the background field. So then all you have to do is differentiate with respect to the Higgs map that will give you an operator that looks at H, G minion, G minion. And that's exactly how you compute the coefficient of these dimension 5 and dimension 6 operators. So you see that the key point is that the thing that controls the coefficient here is the log of the mass squared of the here. On the other hand, the one loop Higgs quadratic divergence, it can be computed using the Coleman Weber potential. We know that it just goes like 1 to 16 pi squared lambda squared times the super trace of the m dagger n. So in one case, CG is determined by the derivative of the log of the mass determinant, while the one loop quadratic divergence in the Coleman Weber is determined by the trace of the determinant of the mass matrix. And that's how you can see that there could be correlation in terms of whether the divergence is canceled in the Coleman Weber potential and the sign of CG here.
But that's not a really logically independent argument, in the sense that, again, I need to follow up the quadratic divergences to see what's cut up.
So
the objection to that would be the general objection to this way of phrasing the hierarchy problem is that the one thing you know about a cutoff is that it's not in the answer because it's the thing that's the bookmark. You had a full theory, you measured the high energy part, and then you get the low energy part, and the cutoff cancels.
Right.
And so what you're really normally doing is you're interested in following large mass ratios or large masses in your problem, leaves physical masses, say.
Right.
And you're using the cutoff as a proxy for that because you're saying on dimensional grounds, if I can get a quadratic divergence, I could probably also get a big mass. But the thing is, if you phrase it this way, you're asking that all the only graph you're doing is the low energy part of the theory, and you're just following the very divergent part of the graph that you don't believe anyway. Whereas when you do it as matching across the threshold, you're forced to physically deal with the particles whose masses are the problem, which may or may not have a symmetry, like supersymmetry, to save the day, which you won't see in the low energy theory. And So the cutoff argument is always kind of not very convincing because it's really the physics that's relevant to the problem isn't in the calculation yet. And if you're using it now to argue that there's a sign in another thing in the looking at the effect of action, I don't know how convinced I'm supposed to be.
But okay, all I'm saying is that, first of all, what I can say is when we compute the Coleman Weber potential, especially when you have because now we're talking about Higgs and suitable. So very specifically, what we think about the cutoff here is the cutoff for sigma monitor. That's a well-defined thing that I can compute within the sigma model. I can compute the cutoff potential.
Cutoffs, no matter how you define them, are not in the answer. So you know, at some level, it's you're casting the same argument in a different language, but it's the same argument.
Yeah, but I don't see anything wrong. But I'm saying that your objection is the usual objection or the usual question of phrasing hierarchy problem in direct.
Right, which is, but there's no problem there, right? I mean, you agree with the statement that the cutoff is not into any physical quantities.
Well, in this case, if there's a sigma model, the cutoff is 3, 4 by f.
Yeah. That's kind of a ballpark thing, but you hear if we were God and we could do all the answers and calculate all the integrals and redo everything exactly, there is no cutoff in the answer.
There is no what?
There is no cutoff in the answer.
Well, there's a cutoff in the calculation when it's an on-linear sigma model, because you can't. That theory has
a that's when theory gets strongly coupled.
QCD, if I could do the exact calculation, there's no cutoff at 4 by f. It's just that if I can't do the calculation or integrate things down to 4 by f, then if I do the rest of the integral down below that, things are coming to 4 by f.
All this is saying is that at the 4 by f, you don't trust the predictive computation. And so you just throw your hands.
No, I'm saying something which is your respective Lagrangian you've got, you're implicitly with a cutoff thinking of it as a Wilson action that you've integrated out something down to some scale lambda, and you could have chosen a lambda anywhere, because it's up to you where you chose to integrate out stuff to.
Okay, and here I chose the lambda to be 4 by f.
So, but the thing is, if I come in at the end of the day when you finish your calculation, the lambda's gone, because you got some lambda dependence when you integrated down to lambda, and then you got negative when you integrated the rest of the way. And so the full answer didn't care about lambda, because that was to do with how we did the calculation, it wasn't a physical thing to calculate.
So what is it that is not a physical thing that I'm calculating? For example, I can certainly make a statement that, you know, if below 4 pi f, okay, below 4 pi f, if there is a new fermion, okay, that is adding to, that is not considering the quadratic divergence of Higgs mass coming from the top, then the sign of Cg from this new fermion has to have an opposite sign from that coming from cinema.
Okay, I'm just not convinced. It takes longer, it's not probably sort that out. So
right, but let me just add to the comment that indeed, if you look at explicit models, for example, you can look at universal actual dimensions, where you have the KK tau at the top, okay, which couples to the Snell model top in exactly the same way as the Snell model top. In this case, the usual conventional wisdom in this language is that this KK top, they add to the quadratic divergence of the standard model top. And then, in the same model, you can compute the contribution of this KK top to the H goes to GG. Then you find there's a constructive interference.
But your claim would be, it sounds like more general than that. So supposing I solve an hierarchy problem with supersymmetry or my favorite way, I don't care what yours.
Right.
You're saying that no matter how I do that, I gotta find
The here is that the yes, so let me, I can make a brief comment about supersymmetry. In the supersymmetry, what you do is that you use a scalar particle to cancel the quadratic divergence. Okay, when you use a scalar particle, what happens in the common weapon potential, the scalar particle in the superstress give you a relative minus sign. So what was the constructive interference in the fermion case becomes destructive interference in the scalar case. And indeed, we are not the first one to make this statement in SUSY, that in SUSY, if they have a scalar partner, the stop without large trilinear A term stop actually interfere constructively with the top for GG goes to H. And that's explicit computation.
So then that's an example that favors the argument you made.
Yes. And all I'm saying is so far, all the models we can think of, you know, it's always consistent with this statement.
Okay, that more convincing than this.
Either way. Okay. Let me just skip. That was the punchline there. So that is there's a sign between the cancellation of the quadratic divergence and the OG. And so let me just skip this part. And then there is a situation where the O gamma is more complicated because in this case O charged particle contribute. But if you only focus on the contribution coming from a set of new heavy electric gauge bosons, then you see the same pattern persist here. That is, if the the W quadratic divergence, the W contribution of the quadratic divergence is cancelled by the W prime. Then inside the O gamma, there is a relative minus sign. And if it's not cancelled, then there's a relative plus sign. And again, very quick comments about the size of effect. So we have two classes of effects. Like I said, first is the three-level effect that goes by b squared over f squared, that for CH and CY. The second class of effect is CG and C gamma, and they go like a ratio mass scale, which is essentially G standard model squared, V squared times G rho squared, F squared. So this is a generic mass in the standard model particle, and this is generic mass of the heavy states. So this could have effects like N top over N heavy top, or NW over N heavy W prime squared. So it turns out that very generically, the constraint from the S parameter would require V squared over F squared is roughly G rho squared over 16 pi squared. Well, it has to be smaller than the G standard model squared. So and so in the end, you know, we find that you know the effect V squared over F squared could be enhanced over a standard model one loop effect by G squared over G standard model squared. So this really depends on how big G rho is. But so in order for this to be an enhancement in the G rho to be much larger than G standard model. But it turns out in this the case, this is when you need a fine tuning in this class of theory. So, and one example is the so-called holographic Higgs model. In this case, you can have G rho much larger than standard model, G standard model, and in this case, your V squared over F squared could be you know, roughly 10% to 30%, but this is due to a fine tuning effect. While if you have in little Higgs theories, typically your G rho is the same order as G standard model, then in this case, the V squared over F squared effect is really 1 over 16 pi squared, so since the effect is only at the order of a few percent. Okay? And for the second class of effect, that is the N top squared over N heavy top squared, and like I said, this really depends on how heavy your N heavy top is, and it could be heavy, it could be light, and we really don't know. Okay? So generically, you know, the effect, you know, could be as small as the standard one loop effect. In this case, there's just no hope of observing them at the UC. But if we are lucky, it could be slightly larger. So this is an argument for having a positive CH in the little Higgs. I'll just skip it. So let me give you the conclusion. So let me try to phrase our statement in an increasing level of restrictions. Okay. First, if we only assuming the Higgs is a fundamental scalar. And assuming that your effective Lagrangian works, that is, so you can integrate out heavy states, write down all these dimension 6 output, then we find that the contribution from integrating heavy states at three levels satisfies CH positive, except when there are triplet scalars coupling to the Higgs. This implies the unshared coupling of the Higgs is reduced from the cinematic expectation if effects from other operators can be neglected. Then also, if assuming Higgs is a fundamental scalar, then we find that CH plus 2CY is positive when integrating out heavy scalars and vectors. This implies the overall Higgs coupling to fermions are reduced from the cinematic expectation. And then we find that CG is negative if there's a new color fermion canceling the top quadratic divergence, implying the interference with the cinematic type is destructive, while CG is positive if it's otherwise. Okay. And now, one more layer of assumption that the Higgs is a composite particle belongs to a non-linear sigma model. Then we find that both CH and CH plus 2CY are positive, coming from the nonlinearity in the Higgs connector. And we also find that the CY is positive from the nonlinearity in the ecology action among the models we serve. And this is one weakness of our argument, that is, we can't really prove that CH CY is positive other than just doing a survey of all the models on the market. And finally, assuming the underlying model has collective breaking mechanism such as little experience, then we find CH is positive even in the presence of triplet scalars. So in the end, we conclude that the group of union production of Higgs is reduced from a cinema rate for all classic Higgs models. And the size of effect depends on the underlying model ranging from modest in the order of 10-30% to as small as cinema model one-loop effect. And given the wealth of information that could be revealed, there's a strong motivation to improve on measurements at the LHC. And we're often faced with the question that, you know, if LHC sees Higgs and nothing else, what do we do? Okay, so to me, you know, the study here makes us a strong scientific case for fitting a precision machine to measure the precision for the Higgs coupling, because you know there's just so much we can learn.
So you said that people could measure something like branching ratios at the 30% level and that kind of thing. What does that translate into in the knowledge of these coefficients?
Right. So essentially, the modification is really controlled by v squared over x squared, because these dimension 6 are. So if v squared over x squared is between 10-30%, then there's a hope of being measured at the six. But if it's a centimeter one effect, it's 1/16 pi squared, then yeah.
Probably in there. That's second. Okay. Because it gets mixed too, you know, there's a, I don't know if you
can. Yeah.